Welcome, everybody. This is That Weird Show, and I am your host, The Shadow. And I feel that tonight's going to be kind of a fun night. I wasn't really planning on doing anything in specific, but tonight should be interesting nonetheless. Just a casual free-for-all, whether it's conspiracy, paranormal, cryptid, whatever. But before I do get on with the show, I do need to, or want to, make a couple of quick shout-outs. That Weird Show is streaming on Facebook and YouTube, and the show is usually uploaded onto Spotify, iHeartRadio, RSS, Amazon Music, all the major platforms. And not to exclude any, we are also streaming on Parapost Network Central, and you can find that on Facebook. This is a podcast streaming platform that where people just share their, you know, streams to, and they have a wide range of topics to choose from, and so check them out. And if you have your own show and you want to reach another spectrum of audience, get a hold of these guys, and Brian Laverty himself or one of his volunteers will reach out to you and help you get your show set up on Parapost. And best of all, it's free. So again, Parapost Network Central, check them out. And if you are a diehard athlete, CrossFit trainer, whatever, or if you are a casual everyday person who has a job or a family life and you're just always on the go, or if you're someone like me and you just want to try to live better, you want to check out Health Empowers You. This is a new venture that Weird Show has become sponsored by. And right now they have a PDF of over 200 smoothie recipes, everything that'll help with immunity boosting, cognitive functions, weight loss, or antioxidant. Whatever you may need, you can find it in this recipe book. And that is at healthempoweredyou.net. And also, while you're there, like I mentioned, they do have recipe PDF. They are, I don't know if they actually have it up yet, but they are working on getting some coffee and tea added. So you definitely want to check by, you know, swing by and check them out. And when you go to, if you get anything off of the site and you go to the checkout, use the promo code TWS05. You see it streaming across the bottom of the screen there. Yes, TWS05, and that will get you 5% off your order. Or the product. I'm still not entirely sure, but I will get more information and get that cleared up. So yeah, healthempoweredyou.net. Check them out. Get empowered. Now, I do have somebody up here with me, and he is going to be helping me with this show tonight. I have known him for a long time, and we actually had a paranormal investigation team together called Night Watch. Some of you may remember that. We had some really interesting cases and some incredible evidence. So, ladies and gentlemen, Neil Mao.
Hello, everyone.
How's it going?
How's it going, Mr. Aaron?
Not too bad, not too bad. So, real quick, as I am sharing this out, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, I don't know. I run this resort here right now. It's got paranormal activity in it as I've been going along here. Haven't really recorded anything because, I don't know, it just didn't really seem like enough proof yet. So once I start getting more activity, I will be giving you some videos to put up and review or whatever if you want. We had like you previously said, we had Night Watch together and stuff like that, and went out and we had some serious stuff happen, I think. A few stick out in my mind, actually, but yeah, I like to dabble with electronics. I make, you know, sensors and stuff like that. You know, I can make a REM pod too if you want. no junk like that. Geez, I don't know what else to say. Really, I'm just a normal guy like anybody else is, you know, just go out and make money however I can.
Right. Well, okay, so a little backstory on Night Watch. And I should probably put this up on the screen before I go any further. Just a forewarning, this show may contain some subjects that might be a little too much for some listeners or viewers. And it won't be just languages, because the reality is there's a lot of weird stuff out there, and some of it can get pretty dark. But yeah, back to the whole history of Night Watch. So I met Neil. Fuck, how old were you?
I think I was like 14 when I met you.
Yeah.
And I'm 46 now, or 46 in a
Yeah.
few weeks, so it's been some time. It's almost 30 years.
And I'm actually turning 50 in September. So I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I met you, and of course, at that point, your family had gone through some pretty serious tragedy. And
Yeah.
what I remember most is when you guys moved into that building. I believe you moved in above, or a floor above Ronnie,
No,
or
below.
was it on the same floor?
No, he was third floor, I was second floor.
Okay, so you were below, yeah.
Yeah.
And we would meet up at Ronnie's apartment, and back then, Ronnie and I, we were, fairly active partakers of recreational activity. We'll just leave it at that. And I remember, and this is probably one of my favorite stories to tell people about you and your brother. Ronnie has this collection of handcrafted drip candles. And we're talking like, I mean, just really cool candles, the kind of stuff you see in horror movies and, things like that. And your brother wasn't aware of that's how they were supposed to look. And I remember watching him picking the drip off the candle.
Oh gosh, I bet Ron tried to kill him.
Ronnie, you know how sometimes you just kind of do a hard, like how you would do one hard knock on a door with just the edge of your knuckle, the crack, got him right on top of the skull.
Oh damn.
Your brother's like, dude, what the fuck? And Ronnie's like, the fuck are you doing to my candles? I'm trying to clean them up. They're supposed to look like that. Fuck. I just spent, like 20 minutes just laughing my ass off.
That's about as bad as when he was playing with Will's sword. And he was bouncing it around and he cut the heck out of his thumb. And Will looks at him and says, "Bet you won't do that again, will you?"
Pretty much. Oh man, yeah. But since we're kind of on the subject of Ronnie, and it's just a weird show and a casual show, when Ronnie and I've told the story of how a friend of mine was murdered by another friend of mine, and the family had just spiraled out of control. And it was bad enough that there were 25 people, myself being one of them, living in that small 5-bedroom house. Now, it may have been 5-bedroom, but it was a small one. And it was only had those bedrooms because the laundry room and the boiler room were converted into rooms as well. So technically, it was only a 3-bedroom house. But there were 25 of us living there, partying, drinking, smoking, all that. And Ronnie and I had the boiler room. And there was a bar that was attached to the same wall that the boiler room was on. And I was talking to somebody, I don't remember who it was, but it must have been pretty loud because all of a sudden I see about 5.5 inches of blade come through the wall. Which was Ronnie's way of telling us to shut the fuck up. Luckily, he knew where the head would be, so he knew where to throw so it wouldn't hurt anybody. But yeah, that motherfucker, I'm telling you.
I thought you were going to tell the other one about how he roasted you guys out of the house.
Oh. All right. Again, a warning to everyone. This is one of those really gross stories. Okay, now, Ronnie's stomach was weird because he could eat anything and everything. And a lot of times he could eat stuff together. But the two things he could never mix was Miller High Life and White Castle Burgers. Some about that combination turned his ass into a chemical warfare factory. The previous night, and he'd done this several times. One time he did it at school, and I'll tell that one after this one. But the previous night, he drank the Miller High Life and went and got to White Castle and went to bed. The next day, there's a bunch of us still inside the house, and he wakes up, walks to the bottom of the stairs, lets one rip, and then walks up the stairs. And by the time he got to the top of the stairs, he shook his leg like he was trying to shake something out. And all of a sudden, it was the worst fucking smell anyone had ever smelled.
Of those hairs.
We had, I want to say it was Dominic. Dominic or Lance, but one of those guys actually opened the living room window and crawled out because they didn't want to have to try to go through the kitchen and go by him to get out.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And Ty Moffitt had this problem with his nose where he couldn't smell anything. And he's just sitting there in the living room wondering, what the fuck is going on? Why is everybody running? And he said, all of a sudden, the hair in my nose started to curl and my eyes started to water. And that's, you know, like, that's when I knew Ronnie let one go.
Mm-hmm.
The time at the school, he did the same thing the night before he went to school, and right around third hour, can't remember if it was his history or English class, but one of those two, he let one rip in the middle of class, and they had to clear out the classroom. The whole class stood in the hallway gagging, and Ronnie is in the middle of the room, got his feet up on his desk with a shit-eating grin on his face.
I can picture that.
Yeah, I mean, that was my teenage years.
Mm-hmm. You know, Will was a really close second to him in that regard.
Yep.
We were staying in a trailer over in Blaine. You know, I believe it's called Blaine International or whatever. And I was sleeping on the floor,
Is that the one that's not too far from High 65?
Yeah.
Okay, I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yep. And I was sleeping on the floor, and he was sleeping in his bed. This was actually before I lived there. Excuse me. Anyways, I had gone to visit him, and we were going to go out and we were going to go do some work in drywall. And all of a sudden, out of a dead sleep, I woke up to the most horrible smell I ever smelled in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So I look over at him, and he's laying on the bed looking down at me going, I wondered how long it would take you to get up. I was like, dude, come on.
Right.
Could have just said something.
Right.
Damn. That boy, I don't know what he ate, but I swear that was enough to make angels cry.
Mm-hmm.
That was bad.
Well,
yeah.
Speaking of angel, what weird topic should we talk about?
I don't know. We can talk about some of the paranormal stuff we did if you want.
Sure, I'm always down for that.
One that has been kind of sticking out in my mind recently is when we heard that voice when we were down in Buffalo at the Dustin Family Massacre.
Oh, the vocal tone. I'm not. I still don't know if that was human or something else, because to this day, or even before and to this day, that had been the only time that sound has ever come out of the spirit box. Never happened again.
That's why that was kind of one of them that stuck with me. It's because like a wah, rah sound, like real weird, like it was, but when we asked it to repeat itself, it did it again and again. We got it to repeat itself like three or four times.
I mean, on the one hand, that would indicate some sort of intelligence, but now we have the next question of what was it, and was it speaking its own language, or was the entity that we were hearing still a supernatural creature, but one that's kind of like an animalistic one, if that makes any sense. Not quite on
Like a
the,
nature spirit or something.
yeah. I don't know. It was just such a bizarre sound, and it almost sounded like the thing might have been extremely agitated or distressed somehow.
Well, yeah, because I mean, well, that area is well known
Oh,
for a lot
shit.
of Native American activity. What's up?
I'm kind of having a little kicking myself moment.
Oh, why is that?
We were at the Dustin Family Massacre site, correct? What's the kind of sound that you might hear if your throat was cut?
Oh my gosh, that just dawned on me. Because wasn't it all of everybody got their throats cut and they were scalped,
Well, I
was
mean,
the story?
they were all fucked up. Scalp, stab, arrow shot, I mean, cut. It was just,
So maybe
it was a
something was choking
massacre.
on its words.
Choking on its own blood, or had a, I mean, anything. So what if what we were hearing was the death rattle when the family was massacred?
I've heard death rattles before, and that does sound similar. Now thinking about it, I mean, I've seen people pass on, and they get that, kind of weird gurgle to them, and it sounds like someone's trying to talk through one. You know what I mean? Like they were trying to say something, like maybe we got a
Maybe I
residual
was asking for
sound
help.
that could be. I mean, where we were wasn't actually the site where they died. Where they died was on a
Well,
farmer's land next to a big rock, but
but well, it was the place that, okay, so the Family Massacre site, for those of you that are listening, that chunk of land was first a memorial, and there was a huge stone out there that had the name of the family that was killed. And a little backstory on that is this took place in the 1800s during the land grab. And if you don't know your history, then this is a sad truth. American is stolen land. But at that time, a lot of the immigrants that were coming over to America were not really told that the land that they were getting was taken from the Native American. And so, not to say that, what happened with the Native American wasn't all that bad then. No, I mean, it was still really fucked up. But because of that distrust between the ruling body, or the politicians and the military, not telling the family of the dangers and where this land was coming from put those families in a real bad position. They now become the target of the anger of the Native American, and they end up paying the price more than the government does, more than the soldiers did, because they weren't out there walking blindly into a bad situation like the settlers were. So,
and wasn't it to kind of add salt to the wound? Wasn't a chief wrongly accused of it and killed in front of his son picking blueberries?
Yep. And so what happened was, is at that time, I can't remember his name, but he was a really well-known chieftain. And because of his position of resisting white settlement, the U.S. government, or at least the local government, wanted him gone. So when they heard about the Dustin Family Massacre, which was perpetrated by Native from a rival tribe, they saw this as an opportunity to pin it on the chief that they wanted gone. And yeah, he would eventually just be run down and killed in front of his son while they were out picking berries.
Yeah, like I said, it's like adding salt to the wound. Already there was a tragedy. Yeah. The whole family was just slaughtered, plus all the people that were with them.
Right.
The Dustin family had one chief is survivor. Killed. What's that?
Yeah. The Dustin family had one survivor, and that was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she would eventually be buried with the rest of her family, which we did find the grave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we found the family plot. Mm-hmm. It's not too far away by a lake on someone's property.
Well, I don't know if that, I know it's private property, but I don't know if that's like, a residential private property or a business private property. Because it could be a private cemetery kind of thing.
It seemed like a family-owned thing. Like, they made, because it was well-maintenanced. Like, it was still mowed and all the stones were visible.
Mm-hmm.
Not washed or anything, mind you, but I mean, for the most part, I felt like they were honored more than some of the older graves that we've seen in other places. Like, I don't remember the name of the cemetery we were in, but we were watching people jump freaking four-wheelers off of, hey, Jonathan, how you doing there, buddy? Cops is in the house, buddy.
Yep. Jonathan Meyer from Crossover Paranormal Society. Thanks for stopping by, Jonathan. That was... It was Colfax Cemetery?
Yes, that's it. Yep.
And that was Colfax. Out by, it was right on the corner of, at the beginning, one of the corners for the haunted highway, Timberlake Road.
Yep. And you got grabbed that night, by the way.
Yep.
If you remember.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't so much as grabbed, it was more like brush. Because I was taking a picture and I saw something strange in one of the images, and I swear, even now, I was convinced that you were right next to me because it literally felt like somebody was right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I didn't hear you say anything and I called your name and I heard you like 30 feet over to the other side, I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Nobody there.
Yeah, I remember you calling me over there, and you're like, dude, I just got touched. I just got touched.
Yeah, yep. And that happened at Holbrook, because I believe it was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
She ran right between me and somebody else, but the pouch that I had on my hip moved, and I was standing still taking pictures.
Yeah, that thing is pretty, like, strapped to you. It doesn't move. When you have your stuff on.
Yeah. You know, so there's that, and then the Colfax Cemetery. I feel like there may be graves that people don't know about, just like Garden of Remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
That may be
possibly
outside.
Like that one in Rochester too, because remember they said there was 2,600 people in there, and there wasn't 2,600 stones.
Yeah, well, they mowed as far to where they believe the original line was, because that's where a lot of the markers stop.
Mm-hmm.
either that or the one that were further back. For one reason or another, could have been forgotten. And
yeah, but I mean, there was outside of in the Garden of Remembrance, outside of the fence, there was like depressions outside of the fence and towards the new road they put in.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of those, you know, situations where you have to be careful, because the last thing you want to do is unknowingly piss off a spirit.
Well, yeah. Remember the deer? And,
oh, yeah.
I took off like a shot.
Yeah, that thing was going to get me. Yeah, luckily, you know, it wasn't that aggressive. And, you know, once it saw the rest of us, you know, it kind of kept its distance.
Yeah, he was curious about us, though. Like, he wasn't scared.
Yeah,
he was not scared. Night. And he had a full rack on him, and that's what I was scared of, is he was going to gore one of us.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just backed the heck off him.
Yeah, I can handle a hoof to the face, but I ain't fucking with no antlers.
Mm-mm. No, that's a 4-inch stab to the head. That'll kill you. Or wherever in your body. I mean, them dang things will, you know, and it was rutting season. So, you know, I'm just like, oh, crap. Now what do I do?
Right.
But, and, you know, and how we noticed him is all we saw was a pair of eyes looking at us from the distance. And they were green. And I was like, what the heck is that? You know, I wasn't quite sure what it was. Then all of a sudden I got back there, I turned my light on, and I'm like, oh, that's a deer. Back away slowly.
Yep. And I remember when I turned my night vision on, you know, that's when I saw the rack. You know, because the rack stood up.
In the night, he had a big rack on him. You know, that was at least a 8-pointer at least.
Right. And that's one of the crazy things about doing outdoor paranormal investigation is, you know, you're already on edge from, you know, thinking, please don't let me get a negative entity. Please don't let me get a whatever. But now, in places like where we go to, we got to worry about, you know, male deer,
nature,
bears, bears, wolves. You know, we don't have any big cats in Minnesota, but
yeah, we do.
We got wrecked.
I've seen them. I know we do.
I mean, like, you know, mountain lions and pumas.
We got cougar.
Do we?
They're up here.
Far up? Huh.
Oh, yes. They're here. And we have on our local website, if you go look at What's Up Ely, every once in a while you'll see people telling you where the cat is at the time. Because they just roam up here. They don't really, like, pick a spot. Small rack.
Yeah.
Well, we were down in southern Minnesota, up here where I am right now. I'm 240 miles away from you. Up here, I'm right by Canada, and they get a lot bigger up here. Let me tell you, even the moose will scare the pants out of you.
Oh yeah. Well, I remember where Cloverton. When we were looking at that abandoned school.
We saw bear scat everywhere.
Oh, man, yeah. You know, and I remember thinking, you know, because I so badly wanted to prank the shit out of Tom while we were up there. Because then it wouldn't have been just bear scat. It would have been Tom scat.
Probably all he had to do was reach his pants. It would have been there.
Yeah, in Canada, we have the 30... Oh, yeah, 30-pointer.
Oh, yeah. I'm 30 miles away from the border. I know exactly what they're talking about there. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't call them here. Deer. I call them elk, because them motherfuckers.
Well, they'll scare you. I mean, and the thing is about the animals up here and stuff, too, they're not afraid of you. Like, they know you're in their environment, and they can do whatever they want. They do not care.
Well, the same thing said with spirits, you know. I mean, that's why, you know, anybody who take paranormal investigations seriously, you know, we all have a kind of a hidden rule that we try to express to the younger or the next generation of investigators, and one of those being, you know, respect the dead as you would the living. And a lot of
they were living ones too. They're still human. They just shed their shell.
When you go to some of these locations, you know, you're going in behind people that have just been total, just real fuck off. And they go in there, they antagonize the spirit and the entities, whatever, or they piss off the owner so bad that they won't let anybody else investigate, and then they're just stuck with an even worse situation.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that that also happened to the next group of investigators, because now, you know, if somebody goes in there before us and starts messing shit up, and then you and I go in, now we're not just trying to solve a mystery or, you know, get answers. We're having to fight it, more or less.
Well, look at the Anoka Asylum over by you. I mean, that's a prime example of people just messing up so damn bad. They won't even let us in the tunnels anymore. They won't let us go into buildings anymore, nothing.
And that's an amazing, amazing place, because that, okay, so the Anoka Insane Asylum in Anoka, Minnesota it's a unique place. This was an insane asylum, a literal insane asylum, but they tried to design this to look more like a summer getaway. But each of the buildings were connected by tunnel. And the way, then the whole purpose for that was that the idea was, when you bring a patient in and they see these beautiful cottage-like buildings, you know, oh, it's a nice place, you know, let's check this out, blah, blah, blah. And then for the more violent patient, which this place has seen a share, they would be brought in by the river and into the tunnels. And the tunnel connect all the buildings and the river pickup.
Yeah, that entrance now, is still there.
Yeah, you can see it. And one of the sad things about this place, though, is I don't know the dates on this, but there are reports, so this is somewhat confirmed, that two patients tried to escape by way of the tunnel. And if I remember correctly, one was just became even more insane.
Yep.
And the other hung himself because he kept going around through the same tunnel, because it's kind of a network down there. But he couldn't find his way out, and he freaked out, and he just thought this was it. So he hung himself off the old steam pipes in the tunnel.
Yep. Well, it's kind of like a weird square down there with fingers going to each building.
Yeah.
And then in the square, there's rooms in there. And there's still equipment down there. It's old, rusty cobwebs, whatever you name it. And then they got some that are cleaned out, they use for storage. And there's a lot of pipes down there and electricals and stuff like that now, where there probably wasn't originally as much as there is now.
Let's see what the so Joanne says. Didn't that happen in
Kingston Penn? Penitentiary? Is that what they're saying?
Kingston Penn. I'm trying to remember that, because the name sounds familiar.
Yeah, it does. Why am I supposed to know that?
If I remember, I might actually be able to answer your question.
The other thing about Anoka is when we did the cemetery, that was I think where we actually got like some strange evidence there.
Yeah, well, that is a set of evidence that is always going to be hard to let me see what the Joanne says. No investigation.
Yeah.
No more people. Yeah.
Yep. Just like that place. Anoka is like a gold mine. I mean, you can take pictures of the windows. I believe, Aaron, I think you got a picture of an entity in a window.
Yep.
There. Of people yep. watching you. And there's nobody in them buildings. There was nobody there.
Well, remember the night that you and I, we went there and we were driving back and you were trying to grab your Mountain Dew and you swerved a little bit and you got mm-hmm. pulled over by that cop.
Yep.
And he saw all the equipment. He's like, so you guys ghost hunters? And like, yeah, we were just mm-hmm. over at Anoka. Come to find out, he used to be one of the nighttime officers for the workout or the work release program mm-hmm. there. And he was telling us, you know, yeah, we used to get called about people being out in the woods. We go out there. There's nobody out there. Strange lights mm-hmm. in the building to cross the ground. The original insane asylum building. So, yeah, I mean, when you have a cop tell you some crazy stories about a location, you know.
And he let us go,
too. I wish we could go back.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I remembered that cop's name. I'd love to interview him and just have him tell his stories that he's seen, you know.
I'd like to talk to some cop that may have been or that were involved in at least investigating some of the allegations of Carlos Avery.
That would be interesting. Carlos Avery raised a lot of questions, and I think I would really like to go back there and do another investigation, honestly. Awesome, John. Okay,
so if you let me know, because I definitely would like to check him out.
But yeah, I'd really like to get back out there whenever I can here. The only trouble is working in a resort, it puts the kibosh on a lot of things. But if I could ever get you up here, we have mines and stuff like that that people tell me are definitely got activity in them. And we can tour.
Truth be told, I'm not sure I could ever bring myself to investigate a mine.
Really? I can get you into one.
I am extremely claustrophobic, for one.
Well, you know what the best part about this one is, though? You don't have to be claustrophobic because the walls aren't as... This is a professional mine that had a cave-in, and they've rebuilt it and whatever else, but it's like 30 foot wide. And about, I don't know, 15, 20 foot tall. They had big equipment in there.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, as soon as you say cave in, yep.
Okay, well.
Yeah, I mean, that's just me. Chris
DeGrid. That's just like that other mine we were at. It was just a hole in the ground. And a few building remnants. That was literally it.
The Milford.
Yep.
Milford
Mine.
Mine Memorial Site.
And all their names are on the bridge as you walk in. It's just.
Yeah, there was like 40-some victims, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. And all their names are on the boards as you walk in. It's just kind of haunting.
Can you imagine the nickel mine in Ontario?
Sudbury, Ontario. Huh. That'd be interesting. I'd love to go down there. I mean, I'm not afraid to go anywhere. I don't really care where I investigate. I just love to investigate, so it doesn't matter right. to me. But I know you got your limits. If you're boxed in and kind of, you know, I know even if I said, well, I'll hold your hand, you'd look at me and go, I'll just chop it off and hand it back to you.
Yeah.
You know, you're going alone, dude.
You know, but in the Milford mine, okay, so what happened with the And this was a magnesium mine. And I can't remember what year it was. But it was
the 40s.
Rather than, yeah.
30s, I mean, or 40s.
But it was the middle of winter. And as they were mining, somehow they came across an unexpected weak spot between the mine and the lake at the time.
The lake is on top of the mine, mind you.
Yeah. And the mine drained the lake. And everybody mm-hmm. that was inside, there was like 40 of them. If I'm like I said, I'm not entirely sure. I would have to go back and double check the history on that. But
42 of them, actually.
All right, I will check them out in a second here, Jonathan. And yeah, when the mine collapsed and the lake drained into the mine, the foreman had the rope that was connected to the emergency horn, had that tied around his waist, and he stayed down in the mine, trying to get as many people as he could out. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a bunch of them died.
He lost his life trying to save them.
Yep. And because that rope was still around his waist, that horn just would not stop till somebody finally had to cut the rope.
Mm-hmm.
And it was months before they were able to dredge it out and finally get the bodies out.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine the stench. The total horror show they saw.
And, you know, what was crazy is that the people who were on top said it was the strangest thing to watch that water drop beneath the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, it was like a couple of months after they got the bodies out. One of the buildings, which was like used to be a garage, and all the cars of those that died in there were still in the garage. And all of a sudden, one night, it just caught on fire and burned everything, cars and all, to the ground. There was nothing left. That is still there. The foundation mm-hmm. is still there.
Yep, we found those. There's actually two mm-hmm. foundations, if you remember.
Yeah.
There's the garage, and then there was some other kind of type of mining building.
Which it could have been like a machine shop, you know, to maintain mm-hmm. the tools or whatever.
Yeah. I'd love to actually metal detect it just to see if we could see something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'd but like I don't want to desecrate the location
we go to.
What's that?
I'd like to metal detect half the locations we go to.
I mean, yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Except Palmer House. I wouldn't want to metal detect that. Just all concrete.
There's that, but I mean, there's also, well, no, not entirely, because you got to remember the one lady that owned it now, she dug up some bone. Part of the basement is still dirt.
I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, part of the basement is still dirt.
Okay.
Which is strange because, you know, with the whole health codes and building codes and all that, the fact that this particular hotel is still allowed to have a partial dirt floor is unique. You don't see very many of that.
Well, I think it was grandfathered in, probably.
Well, yeah. I mean, the first one was built in 1800, which would have been the Stock Center Hotel, and then it burned down in the 1900, and then Palmer House would open in 1901.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they rebuilt it and added another wing to it.
Mm-hmm.
And another side, too. It used to be thinner.
Yeah.
And then when you're in there, while we were investigating, what I found kind of semi-creepy is you see all these historical photos of what the place used to look like. And then you go and you look in like the dining area and it still looks like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, those old panels on the ceilings and...
Mm-hmm. It's all still there. It's just underneath all the stuff they got, like couches and...
Yeah.
Memorabilia and pictures and, I don't know, stuff they sell.
Well, Palmer House holds a special place for you and I for several reasons. One, you got that toy lighting mm-hmm. up when yep. nobody was in the room.
Yep. And we saw, well, people are still on the fence about orbs and stuff, but these things were going down the walls. They weren't, like, in the air.
Yeah. Yeah. Tom got one with his full spectrum.
Mm-hmm. And I had seen them too, but we put Tom's video in because it was better. You could see it more.
Yeah. Well, the other one, it just, no matter how I enhanced it, I could not get it to really stand out. It,
but the plasma again, ball?
Yeah. Well, no, the one, that one was the capture that I got with the, I believe it was the Pentax camera. The yeah. one that you have now. It's either Pentax yep. or Olympus.
It's Pentax.
But, you know, that plasma ball, I mean, I've never caught anything else like it since either.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, the ultimate story of this historic location is our fellow investigator Tom Rutkowski was documented getting oral from a ghost. We think it was mm-hmm. Lucy, the lady of the evening who haunt that particular room.
Yep. 17, I believe it is.
Yep. And ever since then, we've had to tell Tom. Now, Tom, this is a paranormal investigation, not paranormal a dating. Right. Leave him alone. Let's just do what we're here to do and call it good. You know, what you do with yourself on your own time at home, that's all you, bud.
You know, just to show a little bit of investigator humor, I remember when we were at the Dustin massacre site, and we looked up and there's this big cornfield in the back.
Oh.
And we kept telling him, you know, we could kill you and leave you in the cornfield and nobody would know.
Yep, and we also told him that
you out there.
It would be too late because you would probably be caught up in the combine and have your body part.
Yeah, it was pretty good. All day he was freaked out about that. And on our way home, hey, Tom, there's a cornfield.
Fuck you guys.
God, he used to get so mad at us. Poor guy. I'm surprised he didn't stab us for half the crap we did.
Oh, I know. You know, one time I almost scared him completely out of the car. We were at... I think it was that speedway over by Carlos Avery. And he went to get in the... No. We were at your mother's trailer before she passed, mm-hmm. picking you up. And Tom was getting in the car because you were still inside getting your stuff. And as Tom was getting in, I went, woo, 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 barked at him like a big dog.
I remember and that. He jumped out of his skin.
He almost fell completely out of the car. And all I heard for the rest of the day was, you fucking asshole.
That's, like I said, that poor guy.
Yeah.
He's great, though. I still talk to him once in a while. He's good, dude. He's got some stuff going on.
Yeah. I mean, it. You know, that's just one of the things that, you know, when I look back, part of me wants to go back to paranormal investigation and all that stuff. And the other part of me doesn't want to, because as much as I like learning about what's out there, and the toughest thing for me has always been learning just how dark people get.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those instances is Wilkman at Carlos Avery.
Is what?
Jason Wilkman.
Okay, yeah.
He's the 6-year-old that was kidnapped because he
was one of the kidnappers. Yeah.
Well, he was an accidental victim. Okay, so for those who are listening or watching, the story of Jason Wilkman is, this is why I had that screamer in the bottom about, you know, being advised. This is something that we sometimes face as paranormal investigators. We see some things about people that just go beyond what we sometimes think or understand. In the 80s, 1980, I believe it was, a guy by the name of Ming Shue kidnapped a woman who was his former teacher because she failed him in algebra, which kept him from getting into an Ivy League school. And to Asian, Ivy League school is like so up there. They have a whole culture of excellent hard work, you know, prestige and things like that. So when he realized that he wasn't going to get that chance to have that, he became very, you know, disillusioned and just pissed off for several years. He would kidnap this woman and her daughter. He put the daughter in a closet and he would repeatedly rape the teacher. And he had this all on video. And when he was done, he was going to kill them both. So he put them in the trunk of his car and started driving. Well, the mother and daughter were making so much noise that he pulled over, got out, opened the trunk, and started yelling at them. That's when Jason Wilkman came up. I mean, you couldn't... This is one of the worst moments of wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah.
When Ming saw Jason, he grabbed him and threw him in the car and drove everybody out to Carlos Avery. And he grabbed Jason Wilkman first. And he beat him to death with a tire iron. He eventually let the mother and daughter go. And he was caught and he was tried and convicted. And he, the last time I checked, is still serving his time at an Illinois prison. A maximum security prison.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, when you read up on these cases.
Well, there was also the murder thinking, in the barn.
Well, I mean, there's several of them. There, Dygart, the transient, he wasn't a homeless person. But he's one of those guys that just traveled a lot. This is back in 1911. He just traveled a lot by train, which was very common back in those days. And, yeah, he killed a farmer's wife and another farmhand before he was arrested. In the 1950s, the Okathic brothers, who were known gangsters and bootleggers in Minnesota here, they were chased down by the state troopers and had a total epic Hollywood-style shootout at Carlos Avery. Two of the three brothers were killed. The third one would end up going to trial.
Yeah, you know, some of those trees, I think, are old enough. They might have bullet holes in them still.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're probably grown over, but, I mean, it wouldn't be surprised if you take a metal detector and find a bullet that dates back to that time.
That's what I mean. Like, just to find it, I'm not going to take anything.
Right.
I'm just going to find it and leave it where I find it. I don't, you know, like we always say, you know, don't take anything, don't leave anything.
Yeah.
You know, I still live by that. So
then after that would be the Jason Wilkman murder. Then in 1989, Barbara Provo, this is another case that just had me fucked up for a while. Barbara Provo was a victim of a domestic dispute where she was beaten and then she was burned alive out on one of the old dirt roads at Carlos Avery. And then in 2020, Mort Seaway, he was found out there. So, I mean...
And the weird thing is that one road we were on where we got the Okasics to play with us a little bit, it seems like that seems to be where the concentration of a lot of energy is.
Well,
you got to remember that anomaly, like, you know, the EMF anomaly.
Yeah, because it's only about the distance was equivalent to about maybe 2 blocks. Because it wasn't even that far, much further down the road. But that's when we got that massive level 5 EMF hit. And it wasn't just like bouncing back and forth. Mm-hmm. That thing was slammed and stuck on red, level 5.
And we tried to debunk it by turning the car off. We tried everything, you know, took our phones and even put those away and, you know, really just pried our butts off to try to stop the EMF meter from going because we thought maybe we were doing it. But
you know,
no matter what we did, that meter was pegged all the way in the red. And
right now, just to give a little more context here, Carlos Avery is a wildlife management area. And where we were at, there is nothing out there. There's no power line. There's no cell phone towers. There's no those green boxes you see on the side of the road sometimes, or junction unit.
Yeah, no power junction transformers.
Boxes. Yeah, there's none of them. And yeah, so there's no reason whatsoever for a level 5 EMF hit to be out in the middle of fucking nowhere, which is exactly what happened.
And we thought, you know, what if there was an animal tracker or something there?
But that would just be a beep, 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 beep. It wouldn't be, you know, full-blown red.
Yeah. But like I said, we tried to debunk it, maybe thinking, oh, there's something that's got to be here, and there just wasn't anything. Right. There was nothing. Every time we came up with nothing, it was just a signal that we couldn't explain.
Yeah, and then we watched that, you know, watch it fatally go down, slowly fade downward, and later on, we found it again. So this thing is not only huge, but it's moving.
Yeah. We were out in between, I believe it was pool 5 and another pool. I don't remember the number of the other pool. But we're in between two pools like this, and we were sitting up on the road. The road kind of comes up as a ridge in between the two, and that was where we got pegged again. And now the odd thing about that place is, and now I get it, you know, you're going to have like rogue signals and stuff like that, right? But when you go into the nooks and crannies like we did of the place, where there's nothing there, there's no reason. Mm-hmm. All the power lines were on the other side, completely on the other side of the, like a mile away. So there was no way that was going to cause anything. What's that?
At least a mile.
Yeah, there was nothing above us, nothing below us, nothing beside us, and it was just open land. And all of a sudden, we'd stop and we'd be getting hits. And I've walked out into the woods and stuff. Just well, you've been there with other friends too, you know, and I'm sure you've walked out and just kind of like just start investigating wherever. Because out there, you don't know really what's going to happen because it just does. It just happens. It's like just all of a sudden it's there and you don't know how to explain it.
Right. And it's one of those places where the shift between daytime and nighttime is so palpable. Because Tom and I, we've gone out there during the daytime and done wildlife photography. We've gotten some beautiful shots. This is, you know... Carlos Avery is a place that's not just appealing to hunters, but photographers as well, because there's such a wide range of different kinds of wildlife in this area. But as soon as that sun set, it looks different and it feels different.
Yeah, the whole place changes and gets this weird dark vibe to it. It's really weird. Like, you can feel it. It's not just like gradual. I mean, it goes from once it finally goes from daylight to dark, it's just it hits you like a big rock, and you're just like, whoa, what just happened? And you're looking around, and it's almost like things want to reach out and bite you in a way. And
not just the raccoon.
No, No, it's not the wildlife that's coming for you. It's something else.
Yeah, and then don't get me wrong. Them raccoons are the mean motherfuckers, but yeah.
Yeah, they don't bother with us. They're too busy with the trash cans. But anyway, you know, like, the only house that's in that whole entire piece of land is the DNR headquarters there. Well, and no, the DNR headquarters is kind of by where we are.
Well, here's the problem with that whole junction. Yeah, they're the a DNR station there, and yeah, there's a barn out there that's kind of a, you know, like a mechanic shop, storage place. It's just, you know, something that they have.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the big white barn.
Yeah, this is after hours. The security system is nowhere near where we were.
Mm-mm. We were at least about, I would say, at least 2 football fields away from that building.
Mm-hmm.
Or more. But
then there's also the issue that, you know, this is after hours, so there's not a whole lot running out there anyways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might have the emergency power or, you know, whatever, you know, power setting they be at when they shut the place down for the day.
Well, there was no lights in there on in there or anything. And I thought about this too. I thought about, well, what if it was a radio signal from a radio tower? And then I started looking at, they don't have one. There's no radio tower there at all.
Well, not only that, but here's the problem. If that was a radio signal and it was that powerful, why didn't we pick it up on the SB7?
Yeah, why didn't we hear the, you know, we'd hear the, because I know what you're saying. We'd hear the interference.
We would have heard something, yeah. But we heard nothing.
We had the SB11 out too, yep. Which I can dual AM and FM frequency, and that didn't pick up anything either.
Yeah, so it couldn't have been the radio.
No, I just, like I said, I tried thinking about possibilities, and every time I would come up with a new possibility, it's like, no, it can't be that because there's nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, it doesn't exist. So that scenario wouldn't play out.
Right. And there is that one house that sits right on the end of the property that where the main road or the border,
mm-hmm.
You know, but that's a small house. And, you know, again, when you're out in the middle, all you see is trees and savannas and wetlands and dirt mm-hmm. road, nothing else. And yeah, for a signal to be that strong, the object would either have to be right by you, or if you're going to kick it over to the paranormal, then it has to be a spirit, because there's nothing technologically, at least not on a civilian level, that can blast an energy signal that strong.
Not that continuous, distance. No way.
Not that continuous, but not that far either. Because if you held that K2 up to a wireless modem,
mm-hmm.
at best you might get three. Three, you well, know, at
a ham operator could do it if he had like a 10,000-watt boot on there.
Right, but even that
only. But there was nothing like that around.
Well, there's that, but even that. You're still losing that signal the further away you get, because, you know, radio signals are a little different, but mm-hmm. the power to push that, it stays at the bubble, and eventually you're going to get outside of that bubble to where you're not going to get any signal.
Right.
And Carlos Avery's got, what, over 20,000 acres?
Yeah, they're huge.
On just the one part?
Miles.
Yeah, that's just in the one section that we investigate. That's just about 22,000 acres, and it's like, what, another 30,000 acres a little further down the road.
Oh, fun fact. I have seen other investigators posting where we were, by the way. A few of them.
Surprised me.
And they're trying to say, oh, we're here first and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, buddy, I did that years ago. No, yep. Man, you weren't the first. I got proof. I still got pictures and stuff like that from Carlos Avery. And I think I still have video, too.
Yeah, my
if you don't.
One of my external drive completely crashed on me. So I lost everything.
Well, even on the YouTube channel?
Well, see, I took everything on the YouTube channel down. Oh. I had everything stored on my external drive.
Okay. Damn.
I mean, I still have
pictures and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if I can find somebody that can actually take the disc out and put it in another body, then I should be able to get everything back, because I think it's just the motor that shot. The disc themselves should still be fine. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, that just...
Damn it.
You know, or what a pisser. The altar at the cave.
Mm-hmm.
Is there somebody down here? Yes. All right. That's it. We're done. We're going home.
We're out. Thank you very much. Didn't even waste our time.
Yeah.
And that was the weird thing is, like, we got up to the mouth of that thing by climbing. You can't just walk up to
it. I know. Well, I mean, several things here. One is they tried to completely deface that bluff.
Mm-hmm.
Because the road that they're now is not the same one I remember. And also, they put in that parking lot. Yep. That was never there. But
there's a lot of stuff down there.
Yeah. But I remember, you know, going there when I was a kid, and the horror stories you'd hear and the shit you would see. And when we were out there, I swear I would never go back, but somehow we ended up out there. And yeah, we're going out there. And all I remember saying this on the way there on that road, I hope I don't come across the altar. I don't want to find the altar. I hope I don't come across the altar. And the only one we find, the fucking altar.
Yeah. I mean, there was other openings. We didn't go up to them, but.
Well, those were
that was because we were afraid of homeless people coming out and stabbing us or something.
Yeah, that too. That's another problem.
You know, that's one of the dangers of investigating, though, is when you're out, the human element is so unpredictable.
That's why I have that shirt. The living scare me more than the dead do.
Yep. Man, you ain't wrong either. I'm telling you, because they're deviants. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get it. You know, maybe there's a spirit or something that would try to kill you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have not run across any spirits that are trying to kill me. But I've met a few humans that have tried.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like you and Tom when you were down there and that guy, crazy guy, come walking up.
Yeah, down at the Anoka Insane Asylum.
Mm-hmm. You were down by the river, I think it was, or something.
Yep. Yeah, we went too far from the old underground entrance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that dude come up and told you to leave or something.
Well, he told us that if we didn't start walking, he was going to float us in the river.
That's
another way of saying, I'm going to kill you and dump you.
Yeah, and at that time, I believe they had homeless vets staying in bungalows.
Yeah, well, one of them was converted into a halfway house for homeless vets.
Two of them, yeah. And
which, on the one hand, I thought was a great idea. Find these old buildings, repurpose them, you know, because we have a lot of places where the buildings are not in bad shape. They just need to be fixed up and cleaned.
Yeah.
And repurposing some of these for, you know, our homeless vets is a fantastic idea. But here's the problem. One of those places was a building that was used by the old insane asylum. So you're putting a bunch of military vets who have some PTSD or any other kind of psychological trauma from whatever they may have seen or encountered, and you're putting them in a place that is known to have unrested spirit of past patients.
Mm-hmm. I've heard some horror stories. I've seen some things there too. You have too.
The horror stories about what?
Well, I've seen some of the horror stories, or heard some of the horror stories there, where you'll hear disembodied screaming and nobody's there.
Yeah, well, some of the practices that were done there, one of them was the lobotomy. Mm-hmm. Then there was the electroshock therapy, mm-hmm. brutal. Another one is what they call the hydrotherapy, and that's where they wrap you in a blanket and either put you in warm water or cold water, depending on what your behavior is, because it's either supposed to calm you down from a rage or supposed to, you know, help you balance out, I guess.
They probably use cold water more than anything because that'll wear you out.
And another one, and this one is something that really I found particularly disturbing. And this was something that was practiced even into some somewhat recently modern times, like around the 50s or 60s, I think. Mm-hmm. But they had this practice where if a patient bit somebody, they would pull one tooth. And a lot of patients, a lot of patients would end up having no teeth within a couple of months.
That's just insane.
Yeah.
And you know, that's like, now they're putting markers out, but for a long time, they only had numbers there. They didn't have their name. They didn't have any dates or anything like that. They had no dignity whatsoever out there for those people in their graves. You know, it was a sight to behold, I guess.
Yeah.
And since then, since way back, now they've got that new fence we saw. Not so new anymore now, but it was when we went there. It was a brand new fence and a big old black gate. You can't even get into the cemetery anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of that, okay, so the local historical society put a lot of time into researching and finding as much of the old records as they could, that they were able to successfully identify each number and give those patients back their names. They mm-hmm. got it on a huge rock. They got a big old plaque. It's got the names of all the patients that are buried there. And they put up that fence. Some of them have stones now. Yeah. I know they put up that fence to keep people out of it because, you know.
Well, somebody probably defaced them.
Well, there's that, but there's also, you know, Anoka is the Halloween capital of the world. You get all kinds of weird kooks out here from the paranormal field, whether you're a vampire or if you think you're, you know, an alien or if you're a paranormal investigator. You want weird, Anoka's got it. So I think they put it up because they were tired of people trying, you know, people trying to do rituals or investigations or, you know, vandalism, just like the Ramsey Foster Cemetery.
Oh yeah, that was another one.
The ladies, the city official, took all the headstones to try to protect them because the vandalism was so bad. It's just unfortunate that when they threatened her and she left, the headstone disappeared, and there was over three. There was about 300 bodies out there that don't have any markers.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Ramsey Foster because I remember one time you, me, and Lisa and Tom were there. I think we had a few guests there as well. And the guests had left. It was a couple. And so it was just me, you, Tom, and Lisa, I believe, standing there. Mm-hmm. And we were packing up. Well, actually, I should probably back up a little bit first. You were setting up the SLS. And
yeah,
all of a sudden you're like, guys, like what? And you had showed us what you were doing and where you had the camera actually facing as opposed to where it was currently facing, and you just packed everything up and you're like, nope.
So what happened was, as I'm setting up the SLS, first thing that happened is the computer made a weird noise that I've never heard it make before. And then I had the night vision camera facing the headstone that I had the SLS pointed to. And I'm making my adjustments, and I look up, and now the night vision camera is pointed directly at me. Mm-hmm. Nope. Not doing it.
That was the thing.
That was also the night that I got sick.
Mm-hmm.
Because I started feeling nauseous. I had this horrible headache. And I got better once we got about a mile away.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, but while we were there and we were trying to debunk it, or at least I was, we kept hearing footfalls all around us.
Oh, yeah. Yep. All right around the fence line.
Yeah. Because
it was almost like it was daring you.
Yeah. It was like one of our EVPs said leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were. And I said a prayer for the souls. And yep. All around us, crunch, 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 crunch. And I'm just
you got that picture of the two figures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the two dark figures in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but nobody was there. Like, there's one manufacturing plant here and another one here on both sides of the cemetery. And then the cemetery is just in the middle. It's all by itself with a few trees around it.
Yeah.
And, you know, my sensors that I build, we were getting hits on those consistently. They'd say, hey, you want to hit one of this, you know, hit the yellow one, hit the red one, hit the blue one, and they'd do it. You know, it was really weird.
But they did that every time you went there, though. They were always, you know, willing to interact like that.
Yeah. And it was just uncanny, like this tiny little hole in a wall, basically.
But that's the other thing. That's another one of those locations where it changes between night and day, because during the daytime is when we get the more peaceful interactions and responses. It's only when it gets dark that place gets weird.
It was kind of peaceful. I mean, they did call Lisa a whore.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
a couple of times. But I mean, other than that, it was nothing vengeful or terrible.
Right, but we were there with the couple, and they were getting evidence, remember?
They were getting hits on the EMF meter, and then they were also, like, they took the spirit box, and they were talking to them.
Yep, and that was during the day.
Yeah.
Because once they left, and then the night set, that was the time that Lisa got sick.
Mm-hmm. And as we were all leaving, it was kind of weird. I was saying the St. Michael prayer. You know, just to cover my butt.
Mm-hmm.
And I drew a sign of a cross on my forehead, and then all of it stopped as soon as I was off the property.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was no more dark feeling, there was no more danger, nothing. And I don't mean to say that I felt danger in a way where I thought I was going to die or anything. I just felt like something did not have our best interest at heart at the time.
Right.
And, you know, that one, and then there was also in, I believe it's Young America or something like that, where we were.
Norwood Young America?
Yeah, Norwood Young America there. That cemetery Ferguson there.
Ferguson yep. Cemetery, yep.
And I saw the little blue boy run in between the stones.
Yep.
And then I have an EVP, still have it, actually. Of a dog, like, howling.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nothing around to say that, you know, there was never, I couldn't prove or disprove it. I don't know if, I mean, I don't think it was one of you guys, but if it was, you'd have been like, gotcha, bitch, you know, something like that.
We would, one you of guys would have never, owned up to it right away and laugh at you.
Yeah, be like, I got you, you know, that's kind of how we are, but. It was weird because I asked Tom and I asked you, and nobody had no idea.
Yeah, that was the night that I went back to the car to get batteries for my camera. And when I got back up to the gate, everything disappeared. I could not see inside the cemetery. And I didn't see your light until you guys were 20 feet away, which was even stranger because, you know, I can see you coming. You know, I should have seen you coming over the hill, but I didn't. That's what would even, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember you. I called out to you. And you're like, Neil, get over here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came over there because Tom followed me because I wanted to make sure you were all right.
Yeah, and all I kept seeing was like shadow of thing. I still can't tell you exactly what it was, but
you said it was kind of, if I remember right, back then you said it was kind of like a city, almost like you were seeing like a city in front of you, around you.
The problem is I couldn't tell you what time period it was.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell you what city it was, because it just looked like a really bad reception on a TV that was barely lit.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so weird.
Did you just hear those two bangs?
That was my phone.
Oh, okay.
I'm checking out this thing called Clapper, which is supposed to be like the next new thing compared to TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the notification. Anytime you get a new notification, you hear the...
Interesting.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I wasn't hearing shit around you again, because I know you have things going on around you all the time, so...
I got that apartment that drove two people insane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that up there, not far from us, which, strangely enough, my wife's sister, who used to live across the hall from us, now lives in mm-hmm. that apartment. So I'm just waiting here. Yeah, and they just got a newborn kid, too, so I'm a little...
Oh, man.
Leery.
Poor baby. But
everything seems to be fine so far. I haven't heard anything, haven't seen anything. You know, and everybody around here said they all see shadow figures. I don't know what it is. But
we'll have to sit down one time and just thoroughly investigate it if we can. Know, if we can get people to cooperate.
I know we can investigate my apartment, the hallways, and then my sister-in-law's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, we can't.
Yeah. Well, I kind of figured we'd be limited. You remember that old building Josh Lamb used to live in that was a hospital at one time?
Yep. That wouldn't you know it, that's in downtown Anoka.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of places in Anoka, folks. If you want to find you want to find a place to investigate, go in the middle of town, hold up a map, stick a finger anywhere in Anoka, you'll find something.
Oh, yeah. Or like that little castle we found down below the main bridge.
That used to be part of a fantasy playground set for a rich family back in the 1800s.
There was like 18 of them made or something?
6 of them, and only 2 are left.
Yeah.
The one that's right down there by the dam in Anoka, the one that is the most intact, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they restored it. I don't know if you remember
mm-hmm.
looking at it, but they've reinforced it with cement and they've tried to. And then someone, and I found this really odd, but someone had like taken something black, like a lighter maybe or something, and burnt black eyeballs all over that thing on the inside.
Yep, all over the inside. Yeah.
So that was kind of a weird thing to see.
Yeah. But that's something we'll have to talk about on another episode.
Oh, yeah.
We are coming up on almost an hour and a half.
Wow. See what happens when you start tripping down memory lane?
Well, not just memory lane, but just cutting the brake lines on the goat cart and letting it run down a rabbit hole. Hope for the best.
Right.
Hope that the stop at the end isn't quite so sudden.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's all sudden, but what do I know?
Right. But we'll be doing more of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to be it, folks. And I'm going to call it a night on that. And as I say at the end of every show, be smart, be safe, and be kind to one another, because you never know, your one act of kindness might change somebody's life. And also, don't forget to take a swing by healthempoweredyou.net and check out what they got and use the promo code TWS05 for 5% off. And, only one thing left to say, folks, and just stay weird.